Hello, and welcome to this podcast from Consider This. Please let me know what you think and tell others about us on social media. This podcast was originally broadcast live on Northumberland 89.7 FM. You can hear this show live every Friday at noon. Thank you for downloading this program, and I hope you enjoy it. Hello and welcome back. This is Consider This Northumberland, and I'm your host, Robert Washburn, and you're listening to Northumberland 89.7 FM. Statistics Canada reported recently that 1 in 5 Canadians has screened positive for symptoms of depression, anxiety, or post-traumatic stress disorder. Visits to the emergency room at Northumberland Hills Hospital due to mental health crises have jumped 80% in the past 4 months. Last year, during the pandemic, more than 36,000 people received treatment in one form or another from the Community Mental Health Service. The numbers are staggering. Things are expected to get worse as people return to work and children go back to school. Jennifer Cox, who heads up the mental health services for the hospital, will describe exactly what is going on. Certainly, people are much more aware of their mental health, but it is more than that. The isolation, the pandemic fatigue, the constant change, and uncertainty has played havoc on people's well-being. She will explain this and more. Here is my interview with Jennifer Cox. I'm so pleased to have with me today Jennifer Cox, the Integrated Director of Mental Health, Community Programs, and Services at the Northumberland Hills Hospital. Welcome to Consider This.
Thanks, Rob.
There are already reports in the news media about a pandemic after the pandemic related to mental health. What is your assessment for the impact of the pandemic on people's mental health currently as it pertains to Northumberland County?
So I'm glad you asked that question because I think that more and more awareness is being drawn towards mental health now through the pandemic. And one of the things that, I mean, we're always happy, and I want to say thank you to you really for raising the awareness towards mental health and shining a light on it. I have to say that when I first started in community mental health, I've been working in community mental health for over 20 years. I can't imagine working in any other field. I love it. But 20 years ago, we were knocking on people's doors asking if we could come and talk to them about mental health. But what's happening now is actually a reversal of that, right? Where people are calling us and saying, can you come and talk to us about mental health? Can you talk to our group about, coping strategies or how to cope with anxiety or some of the pressures that they're feeling at home? And so, and now people are doing all of those things virtually as well. So, you know, we are a little bit more portable. We can do that, but it's been a reversal of awareness, right? So now people are more aware of it. And I think it's become more of the main point in conversation and focus, right? Around not just thinking about our overall health, but understanding mental health as an integral part of our overall health. What we're seeing in the community in terms of since the pandemic started, it's really increased crisis presentation. So, and by that, I mean, not just people kind of experiencing crisis, but an increase in their acuity or the worsening of their symptoms. So whereas, you know, before people might have, when we opened the walk-in, for example, I used to say, well, you know, people will only tolerate a sore throat for so long, and then they'll really want to go get help for it. We had a longer tolerance period for mental health. We would sort of let that go a little bit longer. And what we're seeing now is people have, that's what is happening to some degree because of the restriction of the pandemic. But so then their symptoms are really worsening. We're seeing a lot more anxiety and depression and a lot of challenges for people. We're all struggling to really differentiate what is a crisis and what isn't in this moment, right? Because we're given so many emergency oriented type messaging. And so it's hard for us to pull out what is a crisis and what isn't. And I think the other thing, to be honest, I think we can all identify is we're having change fatigue is what I think it's being, what I have referred to it as, what I think other people have. People are just really become fatigued and overwhelmed by the constant shifting of rules, of regulations, of what's okay, what's not okay, what's safe, what's not safe, what can I do now, what shouldn't I do? And so that's become And also just the nature of the pandemic has shifted over the last 18 months. So I think we're seeing a lot more people in that role. And then lastly, we're seeing a lot of people for the first time that have not come before, have not presented to us or called us or come to our clinics before. So we're seeing a lot of first timers come through the door. So I think that's telling as well.
In 2020, 2021, total visits to community mental health were over 36,000 visits. And in terms of individuals served, somewhere over between 4,000 and 5,000 in the last 2 years, each year. How does that reflect the state of services and the need in the community?
Sure. I think that people are always surprised to learn that we are doing that many visits or supporting that many people, that many folks across our community. I think the other thing is that we have experienced year over year growth that's, I think, normal for all communities to experience that year over year growth. One of the things that we have really worked here NHH has been really supportive and successful at advocating for more resources getting directed to the community program, but also being supported through the hospital. So when I mentioned about the increase in crisis, one of the things that has gone to support that is the hospital has added another crisis clinician to the emergency department. And so, you know, because of that support, we've been able to then there's more coverage, right? So people coming maybe later in the evening or that sort of thing has been able to be supported. I would also say that, you know, we've had some of that year over year growth is also because we've had some new additional services that have been added to our portfolio that we didn't have before. One of which is a Northumberland based peer support, mental health peer support program, which has a program that has launched 100% in a pandemic. So was not planned to launch in a pandemic. And when you think about peer support, really, it's all really based on connecting to each other, right? People with lived experience connecting with each other in a supportive way. And so it had to completely pivot and launch in a pandemic, which we did. It's a big kudos to them, but one of the programs that Pierre runs is under the umbrella of a recovery college. Recovery colleges are run across many countries in the world, across Canada, there are recovery colleges. We call our recovery college TEL Talks, which is really meant for workshops, educations, connecting sessions for people with lived experience by people with lived experience. So you could run a TEL Talk, which stands for teaching and education learned through living. So people can run a TEL talk on how to get the best out of my doctor's appointment, how to navigate shopping for one. I mean, it could be anything. But I should say that in this last first quarter, we had 377 people attend a program that's now pretty much all virtual. So it really spoke to the growth in the services, but also the desire people have to connect with each other, right? That even when you're not feeling well, I'm not doing well, there's an innate desire to connect to another person that I know would be part of my well-being, right? Could be supportive to me. And that person could be another person with lived experience. It doesn't always have to be a formalized clinician or someone with a professional credential. It could be somebody with lived experience. So to go back to your question around some of that growth, yes, is from lots of work done in advocacy to add new services to the menu, right? To add new services that we know are needed in all communities, but for sure in Northumberland, for sure. We always are, you know, looking to the future. What's next? What do we want to do next? What do we want to add next? What do we want to try to push ahead for? So, and you will probably get there, but part of the other thing that was added, which is the short stay unit, the hospital has promoted the having a short stay unit, which has some capacity for people with mental health issues. And we can then now actually provide some short-term treatment support through those resources that the hospital's made available. So I would say the need, nobody's ever meeting that need 100%. There's always things we're going to strive because we're pretty ambitious. We want to do more all the time. But I think people are always surprised that we're doing that many visits a year or that there's that many people in the community. And to go back to the first question, I think it hits on that mental health is sometimes an invisible issue, right? It's an invisible issue. To think there's about 4,000 or 5,000 people in our community, there's probably more that we could serve that are out there, but it's an invisible issue, right? It's not always obvious. And so I think it kind of hits that point.
Statistics Canada reported in March that 1 in 5 Canadians has screened positive for symptoms of depression, anxiety, or post-traumatic stress disorder. What kind of cases are you seeing? And is there a rise in cases related to the pandemic? In other words, are you seeing more cases of depression? Are you seeing more cases of anxiety? Things that might even go as far as post-traumatic stress disorder.
Sure. We see a lot of trauma, actually. And we, generally speaking, we see a lot of trauma, but I would say, yes, we're seeing probably more depression and anxiety. Definitely. There was an article in the New Yorker a while ago about languishing. And I think a lot of people identified with what that was describing. Right. So, you know, all there's a grouping of people. There are those people that, you know, sort of we kind of got by in our daily lives. We had some things built into our daily life that we could look forward to, or ways that we were sort of just coping, but we were just getting by. Doesn't mean that we were had to be, you know, overly great or our mental health was at the top of its game, but we were just getting by in some areas. But really the pandemic removed those coping strategies from our lives, right? And so, and really removed some of the ability to pivot and implement new strategies. So yes, definitely seeing more anxiety. There's a lot of research around anxiety being one of actually growing faster than depression. At one time when I first started out, depression was referred to as the common cold of mental health. But I would say anxiety is quickly approaching, or if not surpassing, depression. A lot of anxiety in our youth, seeing anxiety in younger people compared to what we would have before, and some grief, a lot of grief as well, because there's a lot of loss during this time, and we don't have the usual ways to connect to people, particularly in our community, right? We have a community that has a larger population of seniors or elderly folks. And so how would you normally cope with a loss is to gather, connect to each other and support each other. And so we're seeing a lot of grief as well.
There's even more concerns about mental health stresses as people are returning to work or integrating out of isolation as things open up. The Center for Addictions and Mental Health released a report at the end of July saying a third of Canadians are reporting moderate to severe anxiety over returning to pre-pandemic routines. Can you give us some insight as to what you're seeing and what it's like for people in Northumberland?
Sure. I think that's part of that change fatigue too, right? I think people have had so many, we've had sort of that back-to-back change on top of change, right? And so our normal, we all sort of deal with change or have that period of time that we incorporate the change into our life. And everybody's sort of period of time is a little bit different. Some people take a little bit longer, some people are a little bit less, but we haven't been afforded any of it really. It's been kind of back to back, right? Where we haven't had time to incorporate the new normal when there's another new normal. So, you know, that has been a really big stressor for people. And I think there's also youth and all age groups right now are struggling with lack of autonomy over some of parts of our life, right? Lack of agency over our life or influence. And so when we're sort of, you know, now workplaces are asking us to come back to work, but we don't have necessarily the agency over, well, what happens to the other people in our house? Are our kids going back to school? And what happens if they're not? And what happens about, whereas, you know, as in my house, it would be myself or my partner that would make those decisions about, okay, where do the kids go for daycare? And then how are they getting transportation home? And who's looking after this person? How am I? But now a lot of that agency is really unknown. And so that's where I think we see the escalation of anxiety and depression set in, where people feel like they can't make plans or make those decisions.
One study released last week said 25% of Canadians are unclear about their employer's plans for returning to work. And another 12% said they don't think their employers even have a return to work plan. All this suggesting that it's adding to people's anxiety, as we've just talked about. What advice might you give someone who's becoming anxious about going back to work or going back to school after being in isolation?
So it's hard. It's really difficult because you're right. So what ends up happening is, and it's not necessarily the fault of employers, because employers are also working in an unknown field or an unknown arena, really. So we don't always know what are the rules that are going to be handed down to us. We don't really know. So it's very hard for employers now to start pivoting and repivoting, and how are they going to deliver their services, or do they need their employees back? Do they not? And so what that does is kind of put the employees in this kind of state of flux all the time as well. And same with the employer, they're trying to struggle with the same thing. So we see both sides of people coming in trying to figure out what to do better. One of the things we do is, you know, try to work with people on what are the immediate things in your life that you can actually touch on. What can you immediately do right now? Because living in a constant state of change actually means trying to separate yourself from that flux as much as you possibly can, and taking some agency over what you can do. And that just might be in this moment, in this day. What could I do in this day? I don't really know what's going to, normally at this time, we're thinking about September coming and the kids are going back to school and I got to get their supplies. And, so right now I have to think about, well, in this one day, what could I do in this one day to help have some control over my life right now? And, you know, the other thing about that is trying not to, this is where it comes into play around what is my crisis and what isn't. If they do go back or if they don't go back, I will, knowing I'll be able to manage in some way, that everyone is going to have these same challenges. And so trying to figure out what is my crisis and what isn't, because I think right now we're told to worry about everything. Just constantly worry about everything, and everything has an equal level of importance. And so what we're trying to do is work with people one-to-one or in anxiety group settings to try to help people manage some of that crisis-prone thinking, right? That not everything has to be a crisis, even though sometimes there's a lot of messaging that everything is equally important and you should worry about everything equally. We have a finite amount of energy, a finite amount of resources for our mental health. And so we have some agency over what that goes to.
There's considerable concern about young people, especially children. What are you finding, and are you treating more children as a result of the pandemic?
So we partner with Rebound Child and Youth Services through the walk-in to provide youth mental health services. And they, through our walk-in, we provide then same day sessions to anybody age 7 and older. And so I would say what's happening for youth is pretty interesting, actually. Youth is an interesting time of life because it is the time when we're actually learning and gaining normally more and more kind of control over our life. Right? We're sort of learning from our parents or other people in our life. And as we get older, we gain more and more control over our life. But what's happening for youth now is, like all of us, it's actually lessening, right? The amount of influence and agency they have over their life is lessening. The other thing that's happening for youth is there's the peers, which are one of the most important influences in a youth's life, are reduced. They're isolated from their peers. And that peers and social connection is what pushes forward their social development, right? So we're really seeing a lot of youth coming in with some isolation, a lot of loneliness, really struggling with how they bounce decisions off other friends, the things that they learn from other friends' experiences, they're not gaining those things. And then I would say a lot of loss. So loss of milestones or celebration of those milestones, understanding transitions in their life. So whereas, you know, I think back and you and I went to high school, we knew what that was going to look like when we graduated. We knew what was going to how that could look afterwards because we watched everybody else do it. What's happening now is youth know they're going to graduate, but they don't know what the next steps are necessarily going to look like. And so there's a lot of anxiety, for sure, a lot of anxiety. And also, kids and youth now, everybody is in their houses all together all the time. And that has increased some stressors in households, right? So there's potentially financial stressors or job or employment stressors going on at home. And that it's a system, a family is a system. And so those stressors ripple throughout that system. And so I would say we're seeing a lot more of those things coming through. But this, you know, through the partnership with Rebound, that's been really great to provide the youth and the kids and their caregivers with that kind of same day service that they might need.
I want to go back and talk a little bit more about the level of services locally. We recently lost the Northumberland Community Counseling Center that served about 1,000 clients each year. Do you think its loss will have an impact on mental health services?
So we're really pleased to be part of that RFP process that the ministries that funded NCCC were involved in. So we were part of that RFP process. There was a number of organizations that were part of that RFP process. And so happy that we were one of the successful organizations in partnership with Cornerstone. We are providing one of the programs that NCCC provided was called the PAR program, which was the Partner Assault Response Program. So we're providing that in collaboration with Cornerstone. So that service will carry on in the same capacity that it had before. So we're receiving those referrals and those intakes and completing that service in the same fashion that it was before.
But that was only one aspect of the work that they did. And there was a lot of others. I mean, they did a lot of work around people who didn't have income. So they offered free services. And they also, 1,000 people is nothing to sneeze at. And when you're talking about how busy you are with 4,000 to 5,000 people, I mean, that's another 1,000 people that are floating out there that may not be able to access services. So, and I also know that your walk-in clinic is limited in the number of hours. To refresh my memory, but I don't think it's open 24 hours a day.
No, 2 days. So every Tuesday and every Thursday. So people could come through the walk-in every Tuesday and every Thursday. And we also have actually now, we have some crisis or mental health coverage actually at the hospital alternating on Saturdays. So that's, we're trying to up staff and have some extended availability. Yeah.
And that's great that you have all that, but there's 1,000 people out there that don't have the same level of service or the same type of service that is geared to their income or either free. So I just wonder, how is that going to be handled? Is that going to create problems, or is that a problem for the community?
So the other portions of the end of what NCCC offered was through a violence VAW funding envelope. And so that has also undergone an RFP process. So I'm happy to say that there's organizations, we're not part of that RFP process, but there is an RFP process to carry on that work in the community, to keep those services going within the community, just with another community partner. So that was, we were successful, like I said, with the PAR program. And so we'll carry that forward and push that on. But that the other RFP process would be for that other envelope that NCCC had.
So can you say from your position, as you can see the broader spectrum that we can't see, so can you say that these 1,000 people, are they going to be getting the services that they need, or are some going to fall through the cracks?
We don't want to see anybody fall through the cracks, no. But that would be the network that's here in Northumberland is a fairly strong network. We're very collaborative and work together. And it's the mission for all of us to not see people fall through the cracks. So that's something that we work for all the time. And whoever's part of that RFP process, that would be one of their priorities, would be to make sure that those individuals get the services that they need.
So if somebody's listening and they were getting services before from these people, are they going to be contacted, or how do they
find their way? I would say for anybody who's wanting to carry on with services or initiate services, call us. Just call us. And people who want to access services should access the services. The navigation of how to work yourself through any system should be the responsibility of the system, which is that we represent the system. We'll try to figure that out with people, but if they're ready and they want to access service, we're certainly not going to tell them to wait. We're going to try to help them out.
So looking forward, what can we expect in the upcoming days, weeks, and months from community mental health?
Probably, I hope you'll hear our voices a little bit more. We're usually trying to be more present, reaching out to our partners or other organizations. We're getting, interestingly now, with things like you've noted about going back to workplaces or kids going back to school, we're sort of more present with other partners in the community, doing more something like this, right? Talking to groups, talking to students, talking to employees from a particular organization on how they can, kind of prepare for this for going back, or what that's going to look like, how they can, you know, manage some of those things that are going on for them. So I hope that you'll hear a little bit more of this. We have, you know, our usual kinds of things like Bell Let's Talk. We have Mental Illness Awareness Week kind of coming in October. So we do tend to try to have more active voices at those times. But I hope that, my hope is that mental health will become part of someone's everyday conversation, not just at those times of the year where there's kind of a light or awareness shone on it. But our hope, our drive really is that people have awareness of it all the time.
Jennifer Cox, I want to thank you so much for talking to me today.
Thanks, Rob. Anytime.
That was Jennifer Cox, Integrated Director of Mental Health Community Programs and Services at Northumberland Hills Hospital. I want to thank my guests this week for talking to me, and I want to thank all the listeners for tuning in today. Please join me again next week when we will talk to the people on the front lines and those behind the scenes who make a difference in your life and Northumberland County. So please tune in. If you would like to listen or share this or any podcast, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. There you will find past podcasts, news, and other information about life and politics in Northumberland County. Or you can go to the radio station's website at northumberland897.ca. I'm Robert Washburn. Thanks for taking time out of your day to listen in, and I hope over the week you will continue to consider this. Thank you for listening to this podcast from Consider This. If you have any comments or would like to suggest a story, please contact me at considerthisnorthumberland@gmail.com, or you can message me on Facebook at Consider This. If you enjoyed this podcast or are looking for more news and information about Northumberland County, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. That's consider-this.ca. And don't forget to share. And again, thank you for listening, and stay tuned for more from Consider This.